Alison White, Head of Adult Services and Chief Social Work Officer for Mid Lothian.
Hiya, I'm Councillor Kelly Parry, Councillor for Mid Lothian West, and this is Councillor Isla.
Hi, Councillor Debbie McCall, Councillor for Ward 1, Pennycook.
Councillor Jim Muirhead, I'll cover the Gorebridge, Newton Grange and Point South.
Peter Ismail, Councillor for East.
I'm Kieran Monroe, the Councillor for Mid Lothian South.
Hi, I'm Alan Clinkscales, I'm the Commander for Mid Lothian.
Good morning, John McKenzie, the new Divisional Commander for J Division, covering Mid Lothian and the other three local authority areas under J Division. Mayor, thanks.
Thank you. Most of Verona from Democratic Services as well. Declarations of interest may be raised now or at the time when the item is raised on the agenda. Kieran, Councillor Munro.
Thanks, Chairman. It's not a declaration of interest, it's just to say I need to leave for another appointment a wee bit early.
I was about to say, Roger, thanks for letting us know. It's old radio talk, I think. Thanks. Okay, minutes, item four. Are we happy to record these as a correct record of the previous meeting? Great. Okay. And item 5.1, appointment of Divisional Commander. So we'd just like to welcome Chief Superintendent Mackenzie, who's replaced Chief Superintendent Leslie Clark. So welcome, John, welcome to the board, and we look forward to working with you. Also, it seemed to happen fairly quickly that Chief Superintendent Clark, that transition's happened quick between our two board meetings. So just like to thank Chief Superintendent Clark for our effort and partnership working with the board as well. So welcome.
Thank you very much. And when we get to the police scrutiny component of the agenda, I'll make some opening comments, if I may.
Thank you. Any comments? Okay, 5.2, annual review of policing. It says PA annual review. I'd sent the draft response out to members Thursday morning, thinking there was no recommended changes, so that was submitted to the SPA on Friday afternoon. Is there any comments? Okay, 5.3, Police Scotland, Mid Lothian Scrutiny Report.
Yeah. Good morning. Thank you very much for the welcome to Mid Lothian for myself, and may I thank the local authority for progressing the statutory requirement in relation to my appointment within the division so promptly, given due consideration to the timescale in relation to Leslie Clark's retirement. The scrutiny report will be broken up into two components. Chief Inspector Clinkscales will outline local performance components as per the report, but there was a couple of points I would like to say just as a couple of opening comments, if I may. I have been appointed Divisional Commander for J Division. I have a background in the arena of investigation, public protection and community policing. I have a historical link with the area under Legacy Lothian and Borders, and clearly I'm delighted to be here. I'm clearly delighted to work with Mid Lothian, who are a very progressive council, who have invested in policing in terms of the additional resource from the Mid Lothian Community Action Team, of which I am greatly appreciative of, as is the community of Mid Lothian and the wider team. I'm also clear that there are really strong areas of collaborative working within Mid Lothian, especially around the areas of antisocial behaviour. My focus in the short term will be around the areas of, or the priorities as per the policing plan, but especially around the areas of violence within Mid Lothian. There's an operation ongoing for a period up until the end of June to ensure that we focus and tackle issues of violence within the area. In addition, I would like to work collaboratively as we move forward in the sort of weeks and months ahead to tackle some of the other issues, especially in relation to the impact on all partners relating to individuals in mental health crisis, missing persons, especially looked after and accommodated children. And you will hear that there's 46% of missing persons within Midlothian are looked after and accommodated children, and there's a need for us to work collectively to address that issue. And in addition, to address the challenges that we have within specific areas in Midlothian, in which certain communities have had not had the benefit of crime reduction as other areas have had, and I'm really keen to work collectively to address some of these issues, and whether that's linked to antisocial behaviour, alcohol provision and so on. I'd like to address these issues in a collaborative manner. I will always listen to the community of Midlothian, and I would seek views from the scrutiny board and as we move forward how that's best achieved. I would like to consider how best to provide additional local information to this scrutiny board. And Angus McInnes, my partnership superintendent, will write to the scrutiny board chair to ask whether there's anything else that I could do to provide that information on behalf of Police Scotland. In terms of the wider executive changes within Police Scotland, if I may move on to those, there has been a lot of movement since we last met. ACC Kenny MacDonald is a new Assistant Chief Constable covering the East of Scotland, and he will, I'm sure, engage with the board as we move forward. The annual policing plan for Police Scotland has been published. However, it's clear that it re-emphasises the priorities that we have within Midlothian from a local policing perspective, and will always tackle issues of violence, antisocial behaviour, protecting people, acquisitive crime, and trying to tackle areas where we have not seen the reductions in criminality or the impact in crime as we have in other areas. I am really conscious that Midlothian is a growing community. The demographics will change over the years, and again, I am keen to work and understand how that will change our risk profile. The Scottish Police Authority have approved the budget for Police Scotland as we move into this financial year. You'll all be aware that Police Scotland have had a reduction of £200 million from its cost base since 2012. However, we continue throughout this financial year, things will continue to be, we will have to be frugally competent. However, our revenue budget continues to be a bit of a struggle. Our capital budget seems to be a bit of a struggle as we move forward. And again, I think there's opportunity speaking with local authority members that we may be able to work collectively in relation to buildings, fleet, technology and so on as we move forward. One of the main issues within Police Scotland as we move forward is a change of a deployment model. The contact assessment model is a new way of deploying police officers based on risk. In Lanarkshire, there is a pilot process in Lanarkshire and in Dumfries and Galloway, and I anticipate that that will move into Midlothian and the wider J Division by the time we get to January 2020. That should hopefully improve the service to the community of Midlothian and be able to deal with, in a quicker time, calls which have higher risk, and we'll deal with other calls in other areas, other ways. And again, I'll be quite happy to take questions on that. I go back to my opening comments of delighted to be in Midlothian. Hopefully we will work collectively to progress some of the challenges we have, and quite happy to take any questions at this juncture from a commander's perspective, or wait for the Chief Inspector to go through his report, and then we can collectively take the questions as we move forward this morning. Alan.
Thanks, Mr. McKenzie. Just like to echo what the Chief Super said, I'm absolutely delighted to be here. This is my first scrutiny where I got a speaking part, so I'll apologise in advance. As a lot of you know, I'm born and bred in Midlothian, so I've got that at heart. I started here as a special many moons ago, and it's never sort of left me. You appreciate I've been in sort of national roles in the organised crime and counter-terrorism unit, economic crime unit, and surveillance and investigations, but I'm more than delighted to have done that, but I'm more than delighted to be back as well. So this is a good challenge I've got. It's a great area, and without further ado, I'll go into some of the figures, if that's okay. I'll just go through the report as is, which starts with missing persons incidents, which is adults. I'll come on to the children later on. They're a different kettle of fish here, so I'll just concentrate on adults to start with. The recorded crimes are 120 this year from 143, which is a 16.1% decrease, which in that terms is quite positive for me. The challenges we have around that as a division is out of those, in the last quarter, there's been 7 high-risk missing persons, and as you appreciate, they're really resource-intensive, and we rely predominantly on a lot of our partner agencies for that. The last one being sort of in Midlothian was the death of Ross Taylor up in Mayfield, which was quite sad, but hit quite a lot of national press headlines, etc. And from basically a community point of view, I was overwhelmed by the community response to that. It was absolutely outstanding because, as you appreciate, we can't do everything ourselves. Repeat missing people, are especially with mental health issues, is one of our challenges, and we continue to look at that. And what are we as a police force and partners doing about that? We're now going to hopefully to be introducing mental health spokes in the community, which is on the back of the Ross Taylor incident. There's been a lot of people signing up for that, which again is really, really positive. We're working closely with the partners in NHS, and as the boss said, that's been driven forward by Superintendent McInnes, who's our partnership superintendent based at Dalkeith. Going on to bogus workman crimes, we recorded the same figures as last year, which is 4, which is low, and which is basically a testament to the preventative work that's been undertaken. The challenges around the bogus workman crimes, as you all appreciate, is an ageing population, a generation who are more sort of trusting and predominantly ask less questions than the younger generation. So the elderly and vulnerable continues to be targeted on that. Prevention is key for this. Social media is good, and we can reach out to their wider family. I know I appreciate older and vulnerable people don't use social media, but if we can hit their extended family, that can be disseminated down to them. We've got conventional letterbox drops, local community engagement, such through libraries, surgeries, care homes and day facilities. We've also got the financial work undergoing at banks and post offices. The new banking protocol, which has been introduced this year, has proven a good success, and that was something I started in the OCT2 organised crime team before I came back to division. A bit about the banking protocol is it's really to raise awareness within the banks and financial institutions if elderly or vulnerable people are coming in and they think they're going to be scammed. It's an instant call to the police, and it's an instant response on that. And I think so far we've saved about £500,000-£600,000 worth of money going to fraudulent accounts through that. So that is a really good success so far. We've also got the Shut Out Scammers campaign and partnership days of action with Trading Standards to try and alleviate the bogus workman crime. Domestic abuse crime, we have 1,160 compared to 979 last year, which is an increase year on year of 18.5%. Those incidents are going up, however, resulting in criminality of these incidents has actually decreased 8.4%. In total, 35.9% of all reported incidents were recorded as a crime. So that's compared to the incidents we go to, the crimes are quite considerably less. The detection rate for domestic abuse sat at 76.6% at the end of the year, which was a good figure to have. We've got the new legislation which came into the force on the 1st of April 2019, Section 1 of the Domestic Abuse Scotland Act, which is coercive and controlling behaviour. To date, I appreciate this is in the new financial year, but in Midlothian we've only had 1 charged with that, just to give you a sort of an idea. Challenges, for me, domestic abuse still remains an underreported crime. What are we and partners doing about that? Well, there's ongoing social media and TV campaigns. Police Scotland has just rolled out a programme a few months ago to all officers and support staff to do with domestic abuse training, and that's mandatory. That's a 1-day course at the college, which I've actually been on, and it's really good. People need to get confidence in reporting and basically knowing that they'll give the appropriate support and listen to, so that's positive. How we're combating this is we're doing proactive bail checks, been undertaking a good use of bail conditions. When people are liberated from custody, they don't go and approach them or don't go live in the same house or street or whatever the bail conditions may be. And we've got our IVPD forms, which in old money was social work referral forms, for all instances, so that can be brought to social work's attention at an early stage. Hate crime incidents, if I can go into that. Recorded, we had 100, which is up from 83 last year, which is a 20% rise, although in layman's terms, there's only 17 more incidents. Challenges around hate crime for us is there's no particular patterns or trends in Midlothian. Neighbour disputes still being are the most sort of common form of this type of incident, and there is obviously challenges going forward there due to the funding being withdrawn from the antisocial behaviour team at Midlothian Council, which poses significant problems for police and the communities going forward as to who's going to actually deal with these at an early stage. What we are doing about it is we've got our community engagement officers on the job to do with the national campaigns, especially to do with nighttime economy workers, which is basically taxi drivers, nightclub staff, and shopkeepers who are open late and often victim to hate crimes. And we're targeting three of the protected characteristics, being religion, race, and sexual orientation. In conjunction with that, we're doing poster campaigns with Midlothian People's Equality Group to try and raise awareness of hate crime. Our antisocial behaviour incidents for the year are 5,835 compared to 6,341 last year, which is a pleasant decrease of 8%. The challenges, I'll just reiterate again, is that we have, as a police force, is a withdrawal of the council funding for antisocial behaviour teams, which is going to be a significant challenge for police. I just done a comparison to do with the figures for month one of this year, which are 844, so we're 2% up on this stage last year, so we're starting to see a rise in the antisocial behaviour, even if at this very, very early stage in the year. What we're doing about it, we've obviously, and thankfully, we've got our MCAT and community officers doing undertaking proactive work. We've got high vis patrols during the school holidays, gala days, festivals to deter antisocial behaviour and underage drinking, which probably a lot goes hand in hand. We've got the pub watch in Dalkeith and Bonnerig in the process of implementing the pub watch. We have our new youth drop-in centre at the Cowden Pavilion in Dalkeith, which is a joint working between police, Aim High, Dalkeith Thistle, Greggs and Woodburn Dalkeith Miners Club. That operates on a Friday afternoon and welcomes all secondary school children. We've got a clean-up campaign being organised for later in the year at the Lord Ancrum Wood in partnership with the Forestry Commission and New Battle Abbey College, which our community teams and MCAT will be involved in. We've got our MCAT team planning an off-road motorbike initiative in problem areas on a monthly basis, and we purchased, as Police Scotland, two new quad bikes at the tail end of last year, so that should help no end in that to do with the off-road motorbike and the rural crime aspect of that. Going on to our drug supply, production and cultivation, the recorded crimes are 77 compared to 53 last year, which is a 45.3% increase. On top of that, we've got an 83.7% detection rate, which is really outstanding in that area. The challenge is drugs are always going to be a challenge for the police and our society, and I think that's something in probably my lifetime that's never going to go away anyway, and we just need to try and keep on top of it. And with that in mind, MCAT's actually leading in this role for Midlothian. We've got a criminal investigation unit, which basically is an intelligence-led policing going forward, together with the proactivity, which for me is key to success. We've got a new protocol working that all our drugs warrants and drugs intelligence now come from our community investigation unit into the local MCAT, and they will action that accordingly. So we should see a rise in the number of detections and proactivity going forward in the new year. Just as a matter, we had Susan Deacon out, or I had her out for the use of better terminology, between Christmas and New Year. She's the chair of the Scottish Police Association. Authority, and she was taken out on a drugs turn with the MCAT in Pennycook, which proved very useful, and it was a bit of an eye-opener to her. There was a lot of stolen property recovered and dealer bags of dimorphine, which was probably low level to the stuff that we usually deal with, but this was an unknown to us, so it sort of nipped that in the bud before it got started and blighted the community. For me, community officers and community engagement is paramount to deal with the intelligence at the grassroots level to work our way up. Drugs, where there's drugs, there's money. The cash and assets that we seized in 2018-19 for Midlothian was in excess of £1 million. And as you appreciate, that goes to the Scottish Consolidated Fund. It would be quite good if we kept that ourselves, but unfortunately we've not got a say in that. We've got our Choices for Life drugs awareness at Lasswade High and Newbuttle High School ongoing, and that's helping with the preventative message as well. Going on to our house break-ins, our domestic house break-ins, they are 145 from 84 last year. So we've seen a 72.6% increase in domestic house break-ins, which was quite alarming, but I'll put a bit of context around that as we go. The challenges for us is basically travelling criminals based in Edinburgh and further afield. We have Operation Green Bay, which targets these in the division, which is basically people breaking into houses to steal high-value cars. We saw a massive spike in quarter four last year, hence the reason that the figures have went up. That was due to two recidivist offenders, Michael Heaps and Lee Ridgway, who are from the Drylaw and Nidre areas, respectfully, committing a hell of a lot of crime in our area. Pleased to say that they've both been caught pretty sharpish and are now in custody. The problem being with the figures have went up, these guys go out on the rampage and they're committing about five or six crimes a night until they're caught, which is quite a challenge for us, but we managed to lock them up. And I know that Heaps has been, he's pled guilty to one charge, and he's got 2 years for the one, and there's a whole load of other reports going in, so our fingers crossed that they're not out for quite a long time. What we're doing about it, on the back of all this, we've got inter-division meetings to share intelligence of all house break-ins. As I said, they're travelling criminals, or just not our criminals. Mostly aren't our criminals, actually. There's a meeting every morning to share this intelligence, which has been fairly effective, given we've locked up the majority of them now. The break-ins to non-dwelling houses is quite a success. We reduced that by 50% last year, basically just due to good proactivity work by the community officers in targeting the recidivist offenders, two or three where we were quite robust with, and those non-dwellings, sheds, etc., have went down 50%. Also, the business house break-ins have decreased by 58% in the same year, which is a good success story as well. Lockdown crime roadshows continue. We've got the lamppostal wraps ongoing, just basically raising awareness of the need of people to secure their premises. As John Dryden said, John retired on last Friday, and he was always of the opinion that the scourge of Midlothian is people not locking their doors. And so I'm going to take that on board with him, and we're going to try and raise that ante as well, just to make sure people lock the doors when they come in. We've got the Straytail Retail Crime Partnership, which remains in place, and we've got a new shoplifting initiative, which has been discussed by myself and the local community sergeants for a trial in the summer months to see how this goes, with a view to rolling that out permanently. I'm aware that there's new retail units scheduled to be built at Strayton. I think they're in the summertime, should be starting quite soon, so that's going to increase the capacity there quite a bit. Crimes of dishonesty, if I can go into that. The recorded crimes, 2,304, down from 2,408 last year, which is a pleasant 4.3% decrease. We've got 104 fewer crimes of dishonesty. The challenges, it's really positive figures. Auto crime has decreased by 19% in the last year. And house break-ins, I include all of them in that, which is your sheds, your domestic house break-ins and your business house break-ins, have decreased by 24% together with pedal cycle theft, which is decreased by 7%. What we're doing about it, we continue not to rest on our laurels. Theft, fraud, theft, shoplifting, motor vehicle crime is all being targeted by proactive media campaigns and other initiatives and campaigns that I've mentioned previously in this document. If we can go into violent crime now, which we've obviously got an emphasis on with the new chief super coming. Excuse me. Our recorded crimes were 63 compared to 66 the previous year, so we've had a slight decrease of 3, which is 4.5%. This is the third successive year that this has gone down in Midlothian, so it's only a positive for us. Excuse me. Just as a sort of breakdown of that, we've had 37 serious assaults, 24 robbery and assaults. 24 robberies, an assault with intent to rob, and 26 cruel treatment of children. I'll go into that because these figures are included in this. Our challenges, cruel and unnatural treatment of children are also included in this crime category. And what's affected these figures, they would have been a lot better than they are. It was long-standing investigations by the National Child Abuse Investigation Unit into Nazareth House in Bonnerig, which is obviously historic sexual crimes. And these figures have all been included in last year's figures. I've got a breakdown for you, just as a sort of idea. The Nazareth House figures, it's been included in various things. We have 53 common assaults. We have 13 offences against children and young people. We've got 2 serious assaults, and we've got 12 sexual assaults, which is 80 crimes in total, split over the various different groups that I'm talking about. So that's had a significant impact last year, and hopefully going forward we'll not see this recurring anyway. What we are doing about this violent crime, I think Midlothian, having reviewed it, I've got a very good weekend policing plan. It's fairly robust. We're in robust enforcement of dispersals, bare curfew checks and conditions on violent offenders. We've got good intelligence-led stop and search, which has been conducted. For me, I was out with them on a night shift on Saturday night, so witnessed it for myself. A lot of ILP checks, incident license premises checks. The dispersals at the pubs and clubs were fairly robust and could be a bit more robust, but that's for us to manage going forward. We've got foot patrols at key times, and high visibility policing at these times is key for me. I attended at Dalkeith Woodburn Miners Club at the dispersal at 2 o'clock, compounded by the fact that it had been Ladies' Day at Musselburgh the same day. And at its peak on Sunday night, about half past nine, there was 825 people in that club, which is quite a challenge for anyone. I checked the licence, and the licence holds 840, so they're just underneath. So that's a challenge for dispersal for us on a Saturday night, but we just need to be more robust the way we disperse them from that club. And there's been 3 serious assaults outside that club in the last month. 2 by bouncers and 1 by a couple of people over-intoxicated. If we're more robust than that, we can get our violent crime figures down. Going on to road casualties, there's been a decrease in the serious road casualties, 3 instances and 3, the rest sort of remain the same. A slight increase in injury only by 3 instances as well. What we are doing about it, we've got an increased camera safety partnership with quite a robust and good partnership working with them due to static and mobile patrols, which is throughout the Midlothian era. We've got a lot more officers trained in local handheld radar checks. We've got a structured patrol matrix now for the road policing sets, identifying the casualty hotspots and targeting them, together with national campaigns for speeding, mobile phone use, drunk driving and engagement with young drivers. There's a DriveWise young drivers initiative in the Borders, and hopefully trying to get that Midlothian soon, which has proved really, really successful in the Scottish Borders. But sort of my emphasis on road casualties is basically prevent more. Going on to missing persons, which is children now. This is a sort of bugbear for me. Since I came here, I've looked at it quite in depth. I'm going to try to get a plan in place for this. We've got 409 instances, up from 391 last year, which is a 7.2% increase. The challenges for me as a divisional or area commander are looked after and accommodated children account for, as Mr McKenzie said, they account for over 46% of all missing child-related incidents, many who repeatedly abscond. I've done a bit of work on it just as a matter of course before I came here. Our habitual missing children, if I can call them that, they're either looked after children or children that's under compulsory supervision order. So in the last quarter out of these figures, there's seven kids and they have been missing in 73 instances in the last quarter, which is quite a lot. I'm personally going to go and visit their parents. This is the ones that's out with the YPUs, etc. I'm going to personally visit their parents because on Saturday night there was one kid missing three times. We brought her back twice and her mother decided to let her out, which is for me is unacceptable. We need to get engagement for the parents on these ones, and it's basically taken up a lot of police time when these kids really aren't missing per se. They're away drinking with their friends, if that makes sense to you. So we're carrying a pilot project to do within Midlothian YPU to do with the one kids in care and the staff engagement for that. So there's going to be more collaborative working to try and reduce the instances of reported missing people. And as I said before, I'm going to visit the parents of these children who are in the community just to get the message over. Going on to our serious organised crime, with my sort of background, I've got a working knowledge of this, which is quite a good thing. There's recently been set up an organised crime partnership, which is a collaboration between Police Scotland and the National Crime Agency, targeting serious organised crime groups. And latterly, we've saw a good result with two individuals being locked up in Lone Head for firearms offences over the last two or three weeks, which are basically unknowns to the police in that respect. We continue to focus on cash and assets seized from these organised crime groups because that's basically where it hurts them most, if we can hit them in the pocket as well. Going on to counter-terrorism, thankfully we don't have a lot of problem with that in Midlothian, but just let's not rest on our laurels. We've just raised awareness of the counter-terrorism issues. For me, community policing is at the heart of this, to gather any intelligence together with educating our young children on counter-terrorism related matters. And we continue the integrity testing of our buildings just to make sure that we are fit for purpose. If I can go on to the MCAT, if you don't mind, which is on the sheet as well, just celebrate a few of the successes. I'd still like to thank you for the continued funding on that. It is making a massive difference to Midlothian, and the results basically speak for themselves. Just highlight two or three things, and I'm quite happy to take questions after this. Total of 16 premises have been searched under warrant in the last quarter by the MCAT. There's drugs, supply charges. In one house, there was £5,000 worth of diamorphine found. Another house, there was firearms. And another instance, there was £3,000 worth of counterfeit tobacco products seized. The MCAT have arrested 46 people on warrant and maintained an overall view of all the warrants in Midlothian. And as I said, going forward, that's going to only increase. Bail curfew checks have carried out a total of 251 in the last quarter, which is quite phenomenal, which has led to 12 people being arrested or reported for breaches of bail. Consistent number of youth calls attended over the last period, there's 96 in total, which a lot was for drinking in public places, etc. So when I went out with them a couple of times, the kids that get their buck fast and their 2020, sorry, I had to remember when I was a kid, poured out in front of them, that sort of hits home, and they don't like it, but we'll continue to be as robust as possible with that. The road checks, they've done 17 static road checks over the last quarter, and there's been a various number of offences and fixed penalty tickets given out. They've done 84 breath tests of one positive, which is quite good because we're getting the majority that's not positive, so the message is hitting home. They continue to work exclusively as well with rural crime. We had a big rural crime initiative up at Sir John Clark's estate last month, which was very well attended, and local MEPs were there as well, farmers and landed gentry, which went down well. We had the, I've said before, we had the purchase of the two new quad bikes, so they were up there, a bit of community engagement with the kids having a go in them as well, but we continue to work with the landowners to do with the sheep worrying, etc., which is quite a thing for them, and we've got really good success in that in the last wee while, I think. I think that's really all from me. I'm quite happy to take questions or anything, and apologies for going on so long.
Thanks very much, Aaron, and thank Aaron and John for your opening comments as well. Any comments or questions? Councillor Muirhead.
Yeah, I'd kind of like to direct one to John in the first instance, John. You mentioned, both of you have mentioned a few times the benefit of the CAT teams being in Midlothian, and I'm going to say something that I think I said the last time we had a change of personnel. It's obviously to us, it's vitally important. We talked about strains in the budgets, and we've got the same kind of problem here, both in terms of capital and revenue. But it's absolutely vital that the CAT teams are an absolute addition to the policing that we would normally expect to be available in Midlothian. And I'm saying that because I understand the pressures that come on when you're trying to balance budgets and get things to work. It's just the impression that we can't be in a situation where, to kind of plug shortfalls in budgets, that the CAT teams are in any way kind of used. I know we've got an agreement that states that, but I just feel it's helpful to kind of reiterate that when we've got new personnel coming in, that the CAT teams have to be in addition to what we'd normally expect to be available as far as policing is concerned in Midlothian, just to kind of make that point.
Yeah, I can come back to that to give you reassurance and clarity then. Absolutely, the CAT teams are funded by the local authority to undertake activity as agreed in the service level agreement, in which I am clear that these officers are additional community-based officers for the area of Midlothian. What I would say, however, is, and I think you've highlighted this, that at a point of need within the Midlothian area, and I know that's never an issue in Midlothian, and it's written within the service level agreement, at the point of need, officers will be flexed to where that point of need is, primarily in West Lothian, but if there was an issue that existed across the division, then, but it would have to be of a significant risk factor for the community officers to be removed. And then the other point, I suppose, is there's two elements of policing, I suppose, within two elements of uniform policing within Midlothian, that element of response and the element of community. The point that you make, additionality within the community policing, absolutely, and I will always stand by that position across all local authority areas within J Division. If local authorities wish to invest within policing or resource, then that's additionality from a community perspective. That being said, the response component is flexed across the division, as you would expect, to meet the response demands across the wider division.
Thanks for that. It's a point I've also raised at COSLA Police Conveners meeting as well, that the funded officers should not form any part of the modelling for a new local policing plan. They should be additionality. Any other questions or comments? Councillor McCall.
Thank you, Chair. John, I'd like to welcome you. It's been quite a few years. For the rest of the meeting, John and I worked together. We were trying to work it out, but I think probably going back to maybe 2010, possibly, at least. I don't know. Well, let's not talk about the olden days. Anyway, it's lovely to see you. I wanted to ask about the MISPERS, the missing persons. And I wonder, are we becoming a bit more aware of our MISPERS, particularly with Ross Taylor? There was a lot of information on Facebook. Sadly, there was someone else in East Lothian over this weekend. Is it something that we're becoming more aware of, rather than there are
more people in this situation?
I think there's probably three parts to this, and thank you very much for your welcome. And again, I was trying to remember when I met Councillor McCall in the car park, and I think it could go further back than 2010 just to make us both feel even older than we are. However, there's three components, I would say. I think the issue of social media certainly impacts on community awareness in terms of missing persons, and actually the work we undertake at an early stage, not just police but wider partners, to try and find individuals who are reported missing. They are graded, however, from a risk assessment perspective. There's no evidence to suggest that that's increased the numbers dramatically, however, but there might be a component to that. The second component is that from an adult perspective, as the demographic changes, we are entering into ageing population, and actually when you look at Midlothian's demographic in terms of the ageing population up to 2035, it's quite significant in terms of the change, and there are increased individuals who are reported missing with issues, challenges such as dementia and so on, and there's some work that we want to do in relation to that in terms of trying to engage with families at an earlier stage. We have a representative from the National Missing Persons Unit come to this division in 2 weeks' time, and there are some technical opportunities that we could engage with families to try and alleviate that issue. And the third point, I suppose, is the continuing challenge around missing children. That is a concern for me in Midlothian. It's a concern for a couple of reasons. One, that missing children have a wide range of vulnerabilities and a wide range of complexities around why they go missing, and trying to understand the reason why they go missing. With missing children, you enter into the areas of vulnerability, potentially CSE, potentially being involved in antisocial behaviour, potentially being victims of violence. So we have to try, but I don't have the solution to that. The solution is based with a wide range of partners, but we have to try and understand why children are going missing. The numbers in Midlothian are increasing. Aaron has highlighted that the number of repeat children that are going missing. Speaking to the parents, as Aaron's highlighted, is a very short-term measure, but it's not a solution to the challenge that exists. And I'm sure, again, there'll be wider parties within the local authority who will have a say in how we achieve this. But for me, the numbers that have been presented here for missing children isn't a police challenge, it's everybody's challenge. And actually, it's unacceptable that 46% of looked after and accommodated children within this local authority area repeatedly go missing, or 46% of missing children are looked after and accommodated. When you look at the proportion of how many children are actually looked after and accommodated, it's quite a big number in terms from a missing perspective. But again, the only way to do that is to work collectively.
John, Councillor McCall.
Thanks for that, John. Can I also ask about the road casualties and the are we still seeing hotspots on the A68 and the A6094? Is that our main our areas of issue? And just on the quad bikes, I joined Sergeant Lindsay and a couple of the community cops up at Flotterston. We were doing an information day up there, and it was great to actually engage the kids, you know, come along and, you know, have a look at the quad bikes rather than this, oh look, here's a scary cop that's going to chase you away. So I felt that was a really interesting and worthwhile day in being involved in.
Yeah, I think the A68 is still a sort of problem area for us. I spoke to the traffic inspector before I came out, so that's one of their hotspots that they're targeting. And as for the quad bikes, yeah, that was really good. And we've done the same thing at the Rural Crime Initiative up at Pennycook House. So it's just to try and get the scary cop aspect away. But I didn't get a shot on the quad bikes. That was the only thing as well. So
could I just come back in terms of the road casualties? Road policing within Scotland, I've engaged with road policing, and there are certain trunk roads within the J Division area in which we will be focusing on throughout the summer and into the autumn and so on in the winter. A68 is one, however, that doesn't negate the opportunity for local community to engage with their local inspector, local area commander about specific issues and challenges that they have within their own community.
So just on the issue of the quad bikes, I think that engagement is key. You'll be aware we're coming at the gala day season, so it's maybe an opportunity there if resources permit. Councillor Smale.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about the interaction of the police function with the CAT function, but going to the other side of the Venn diagram, as it were, there's also this grey area between the CAT function and what used to be done by the community safety team. Indeed, you've already talked about that. And I just wondered if you could make that a little less vague. Clearly, you will be asked to do things in the CAT teams that previously were mediations carried out at the level of the community safety teams, or the as antisocial behaviour teams, as you called them. But now they're not there. I mean, at what point would the CAT team not respond to a call? What becomes too trivial for you? Is there a gap in which we're liable to find that things escalate when they could have been solved at an earlier time?
If I can start with this. This is some of the difficult discussions that have previously taken place prior to my arrival here. And there are probably two components to this in my mind. The local authority made a decision, and a very difficult decision, I would say, in terms of what funding arrangements would be put in place in relation to the community safety team balanced up against the CAT team. And I understand the difficulty around that decision. Clearly, the CAT team are going to deal with areas of antisocial behaviour. There is a service level agreement that was signed off in relation to what the expectations of that CAT team were, which do not reflect the full functionality of the community safety team. So what I'm basically saying, I think, or what I'm saying is, the local authority cannot expect the CAT team to pick up all the functionality that existed within the community safety team remit. And I don't think that that is the expectation of the local authority. In terms of your specific question about when does something become at a threshold in which the CAT team, it's difficult for me to specify within this room. However, I am clear that the preventative approach is a much better approach than actually dealing with the ultimate consequences, which potentially links into violence, potentially links into wider antisocial behaviour that cannot be rectified. But I have asked Aaron to engage with local authority, and we are going to look at that service level agreement to ensure that we're all clear what the arrangements are. But I am clear that the complete remit of the community safety team cannot just be placed onto the CAT team, but I understand that that was never the expectation of the elected members or the wider local authority team.
Thanks. Yeah, certainly my view is, Chair, that the CAT team was never a replacement for a community safety team when it's reflected in the service level agreement. Councillor Smale.
Yeah, I'm not saying it was, and it clearly cannot be because of the simple restriction of the number of man hours that you can provide, but there is an overlap between the two, and if we are all agreed that prevention is better than escalation, it may be a question of simply more clearly defining at what level a situation is appropriate for the CAT team when we get the most bang for our buck. And so that it will actually save the CAT team resources by intervening earlier where the community justice team would have done so in the past, rather than waiting for things to get out of control, like in a neighbour dispute.
Yeah, I don't disagree with the point that you've made. As I say, we will look, I think the best place to deal with that is to look at what was in the service level agreement, look to see if we have to expand that. I'll ensure there's correspondence sent back to this committee and wider elected members just in terms of the threshold that you talk about. But there is a pragmatic approach from a policing perspective that has to be taken here. There's a financial reality that we're all living in, that actually the local authority have taken a very progressive decision to make in relation to the funding arrangements. They've supported the CAT team. I am clearly, as a divisional commander, not going to say to the local authority, we are not going to support the early intervention and preventative approach in relation to antisocial behaviour. I'm clearly not going to be in that position. I've got a background in relation to that community engagement, early intervention, but we just have to be clear. All parties have to be clear in terms of what that threshold of intervention is, and that we don't get into a wider debate of the community safety team used to do this, so it now crosses over to the CAT team, because that's clearly not the position and it was clearly not the intended position. But if you're wanting reassurance that from a divisional commander's perspective that I am invested in ensuring that we engage with antisocial behaviour issues at an early stage across local authority housing, across wider housing areas, of course I'm giving that commitment.
I would just come in, certainly Aaron and myself are meeting again next Monday. We've had a number of meetings to be discussing the disaggregation of the tasks that have been traditionally undertaken by the community safety team. We had hoped, to some extent with the disaggregation of the team, the two community safety officers have been really successful and have been able to get other jobs within the council fairly quickly, which has meant this has put pressure on us much sooner than we were expecting in terms of that process. But we hope to be able to come out quite clearly following the meeting next Monday about where the responsibility for some of those tasks will sit. It gives us an opportunity to look at updating the antisocial behaviour strategy so that we're really clear about who undertakes what actions, but there will be some things in amongst that that we won't be dealing with in the same way, because there isn't going to be the same capacity that we've been used to having. But we've been undertaking that work to make sure that we were clear about what the community safety team did and how we can share out those tasks to ensure that we do the best within the resources, but that clarity that there will be some tasks that are just not able to be undertaken in the same way at all.
Thank you very much for that response. And I think we're all agreed on the philosophy of it, that, but it's a question of putting up good fences so everyone knows what's going to happen. There's no expectation gap on either side. I wonder if I could briefly move to a specific incident, and you may not be able to comment. I'm conscious that a body was found in a bin in Gore Bridge recently, and I just wonder if there's any implications for the local authority.
Thanks. Just to remind members that no one delve into operational matters, but this is audio recorded as well.
You're absolutely correct. A body was recovered within a bin in the Gore Bridge area, Jubilee Crescent. It was within the press. It's been highlighted, the individual concerned. And it was highlighted that the individual concerned was a reported missing person. Due to operational matters, I do not intend to delve further into that issue beyond what's already in the public domain through the media.
Thank you. Councillor Muirhead.
Yeah, I think just, I'm going to ask another question, but just a wee comment on the community safety thing. It's obviously the case that we want to actually be looking at what the community safety team were doing that was effective, and then trying to find out how we're going to do that going forward. Just a comment on that. But you know, I'm looking at the stats here, and where we've got reductions and. In some aspects, and like vehicle crime and things like that. And I have to say, living in Gorebridge, and the antisocial behaviour thing as well, living in Gorebridge, it doesn't feel like that. And, you know, and looking at the comments that are coming through on Facebook, you know, we have a lot of problems in some particular areas. And I was interested, John, when you were saying about focusing on areas that we've no seen the level of reductions that we're seeing in other areas. So I'm interested in that and how we might get some further breakdown to, you know, what we've got here is Midlothian wide stats, but you know, I would be interested in going a bit deeper than that to see where we're maybe we still have kind of areas that aren't going in the right direction in terms of the stats. I know that this isn't just a police issue, because I mean, in my community, we've got one street with two households that are giving us real grief, and I think the vehicle that you'll have seen on Facebook, the vehicle that was a disability vehicle, brand new disability vehicle, was wrecked, stolen. Again, I'm being told by people that it was seen in that street just before it was trashed. You know, we've got particular incidents that really have a hugely debilitating effect on the people that live in and around the problem households. As I say, I'm not putting this at the door in any way of the police service. I was up there on Friday night, and the police did attend a particular incident that I'll not go into any further. But you know, I think I would really be interested in a wee bit more information about, you know, where we are not moving, what communities, if it's the case that we're no moving in the kind of right direction.
I am really keen to provide the scrutiny boards across J Division with some localised stats which enable you to understand some of the challenges in certain communities, so that actually when I come back we can have some discussions around that collective ownership of certain areas. And to do that, I believe it is really important that the scrutiny board understand some of the challenges that exist, not just within a Midlothian context, but within a community context as well. I actually have data that goes down to ward data. However, what I would say is actually that data comes with an element of context in terms of not a warning around it, but just actually the accuracy of some of that data. But again, Angus McInnes will be engaging with the scrutiny board chair and then the wider board through the chair to understand what else that you would like. I would like to come back the next time with further detail with regards to some of the challenges that we have. And I go back to, in my opening comments, there are communities within Midlothian that have not seen the reduction in crime that others have. So what you then have is you have 8% decreases in certain across the, but you're quite rightly saying actually there are certain communities that don't feel that. And I am clear that that is a position that certain communities have not felt the decreases that others have. And we talk about prevention, but you'll be aware that there's three levels of prevention, and that primary component links in with such things as opportunity, inequality, poverty. And I must say, even in my early stages and within Midlothian, surprised that the over-provision of alcohol in certain communities as well. And again, that's not a policing issue, that's a partnership issue that exists. And these all link in with issues of antisocial behaviour. There's a clear link between alcohol provision and antisocial behaviour, alcohol provision and violence. And actually, within communities within Midlothian, some of these challenges exist, but it's not a policing challenge, it's everybody's challenge. And I am more than content to come back to the next board with wider detail for you to then be able to come back to myself and Aaron with wider scrutiny. And I don't know if you wish to make any further comment on that.
No, I think that's a valid point. I'll definitely look into that when we come back. And I'll have a look at it beforehand, actually, to see if there's any community officers that we need to put into specific areas to target specific crimes. No, you've got my assurance on that. I'll do that, definitely.
Okay, thank you. Alan, can I just ask one question on this scrutiny report, the missing adults, missing persons? The 10% that are cared for adults, is that from care establishments, secure care establishments, would you know? Or I'm just trying to establish out if it is from care homes. Page 14 of 56, so executive summary, missing person incidents adults. It's the first one in the scrutiny report.
Sorry, what was your question? Yeah, I don't have that information at all to do with adults. It's just I broke down the children. I would suggest not, but I wouldn't be able to give a definitive on that.
No, I was just looking to see if it was care establishments and if they were learning, if there's processes that they might put in place as well to learn from. That's fine. Be happy to move on. Thanks very much, John and Aaron. Okay, item 5.4, local plan, Scottish Fire and Rescue Service, local plan performance, quarter four.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, everybody. Just before I hand over to Dean to cover the sort of performance report, just a couple of updates from a Scottish Fire and Rescue Service perspective. Reported at the last board, we'd appointed a new chief officer, Martin Blunden, who's now been with us for 3 to 4 months. Had the pleasure of hosting him in Lauder for our retained manager seminar, which we host annually. He was a keynote speaker at that and went down very well with our retained managers across the mid-east Lothian and the Scottish borders, and certainly Pennycook had representation there. So on the back of the chief's appointment, we've also now got a new deputy chief, David McGowan, who was previously the assistant chief for prevention and protection. And we have two new assistant chief officers. One for prevention and protection is Ross Haggart, and one for response and resilience is John Dickey. And the East of Scotland now also has a new deputy assistant chief officer. Ali Perry has moved into a directorate role in headquarters, and we have Jim McNeil joining us just within the last few weeks. So I've reported previously about Newbridge, our training facility. Hopefully within the next 6 to 8 weeks, the main contractors are off-site. There's a few electrical issues to be resolved, like any construction programme. So within 6 to 8 weeks, we should be on-site with our training team and getting the sort of up to speed with the use of those facilities. I would imagine we will still be planning an official opening event sometime in the mid-summer. But I would imagine there will be an invite at least to the chair and or to the board, and subsequently we can arrange for a visit if anyone's interested later in the year. I have also submitted a business case just last week to get some additional support into the area from what we're calling a rural full-time post. Even though Midlothian's only got one retained station, I still would like to get a resource. It will be shared with Peebles, Innerleith and West Linton, but it will be important to include Pennycook in that cluster with that, should that be successful. And there's a whole range of activities that they can be involved in, but the first part of that is whether we get them or not. So hopefully we'll, by the next board, I'll be able to report a positive outcome with that one. And that is me just now. Unless there's any immediate questions, I will hand over to Dean.
Thank you very much, Stevie. Good morning, everyone. I'm going to start on page 34 of your pack. And just to say that we had 1,283 incidents in Midlothian this last year, which is a decrease of 173 incidents. If you look at the performance summary table at the top, out of the six areas that we report on to Midlothian, five of the areas were below the levels of last year. The only one being slightly above was false alarms, unwanted fire alarm signals. The pleasing information from that table at the top is that apart from deliberate fires and UFAS, right across the last 5 years, Midlothian are down quite significantly on what it's been like. And the correlation between the special service RTCs and special service casualties is quite stark. You know, we're down quite a lot in that area. And when our RTCs reduce, also our casualties reduce. As I've said before, as far as special service casualties are concerned, we are almost pressing the button on potentially responding to out-of-hospital cardiac arrests. And that figure, if that button does get pressed quite soon, hopefully, that figure will increase quite significantly. So it's just a wee warning to say that although it's sitting at that level just now, it's mostly RTCs and people falling in their homes, little medical responses. But if we do press the button on that, that figure will rise quite significantly, particularly in Midlothian area. Page 35, we'll go into the main body of, 36, the main body of the report, and we'll touch on accidental dwelling fires. During the last quarter, we responded to 17 accidental dwelling fires, which is an increase on the year before. And if we look at the chart second from the bottom, we'll see that we're in line with the East Service Delivery Area in Scotland in terms of the amount of dwelling fires that we actually have in our area. Of the 17 fires, 76% occurred in single occupancy households. And that is the same rough figure across Scotland. The majority of fires happen in single occupancy households. It's understandable why, if people are on their own, you know, there's no one else in the house with them, and potentially if they have been drinking or have mental health issues, etc., they don't discover the fire as quickly as potentially it would be if there was half a dozen people in the house. 23%, a quarter of them are in the over 65 age category, and the main causes were cooking, 60%, and faulty equipment, faulty electrical equipment mostly, and that's increasing all the time. It used to be cooking, smoking, and faulty electrical equipment was below, but because our houses are absolutely flooded with electrical equipment now, that's increasing. That is increasing. But smoke and cooking are still the two main factors in Scotland when it comes to casualties and, in particular, fatalities from fires. We obviously continue to target the people at risk where we can, and we carry out home safety visits. And in the last quarter, we carried out 284 home fire safety visits, a lot of which were passed to us from partner agencies, which is great for us because that means that we're targeting the higher risk people. But you can see from the section there, there was only 12 of the properties that had fires out of the 17 had actually smoke detectors fitted. So although we've been fitting smoke detectors for,
2004.
Yeah, there you go, quite a few years. We're still not everybody. You would expect in this day and age the majority of households have got, but there's five households not got smoke detectors there. And then we get the other ones where we go and investigate a fire in a house, and you've got the ones who have the smoke detectors been bleeping, so they've knocked it off the ceiling with a brush and things like that. So we are getting there, but there's still a lot of work to be done in that particular area. So that's our dwelling fires. Next page, 37, we talk about our fire casualties. We only dealt with two fire casualties in the last reporting period, one of which was unfortunately a fatality. You'll probably be aware of at the caravan park up at Streaton. The two casualties, the trend does remain low, and we're quite a wee bit under the national and East Service delivery area averages. And the factors for both casualties were cooking. And obviously, we won't touch on the fatality at Streaton, but that's still under investigation. Our fire investigation, along with the scenes of crimes officers from the police, carried out a full investigation into that. And there'll be a case conference at some stage about it, I would imagine, but it sometimes takes 6 months to a year to get to that stage. But it was pleasing to see that their casualties still remain low for Midlothian. Page 38, our deliberate fires, which doesn't include dwellings. Quite a significant increase in this period. We dealt with 81 deliberate fires, which is an increase in 47 when compared to the same period last year. I will put a wee warning on that, is that it's sometimes to do with the weather. And we did have a particularly dry period at that stage. But that's not the only reason. We are seeing, particularly in the Midlothian East, South and Dalkeith wards, there is fire setting on the increase again. Sometimes it's cyclical, sometimes it's to do with social media, and sometimes it's just unrest among certain groups of youth, particularly your S1, S2 groups. They tend to lose the place from time to time, really, and they just start setting fires to quite a lot of things. Unfortunately, during that period, there was three acts of violence towards our crews, two in Mayfield and one in East Houses, where it started off with stones thrown at the fire engines, verbal abuse and stones, and then ended up with a glass bottle being thrown at them and things. So we are we are always pretty active with the schools in that area, and 90% of the time it works, but we do have these little blips. And along with the police colleagues, I mean, we do work hard to try and do the early action and early intervention, early prevention activities, just to make sure. But I'd like to assure you that it's a tiny, t- tiny, tiny percentage of the youths within these areas. And even as a percentage of the youths, if there's 30 children there, there might be one or two that cause these issues. So when you look at it overall, it's a small amount. But we do not take our eye off the ball with that. We will continue to push the prevention activities forward in these areas. And we do a lot of interaction, intervention with the schools where necessary, and that will continue. And unfortunately, we just have little blips from time to time. We're not any different from, slightly above the rest of Scotland, but again, we're pretty flatlining in terms of the past 5 years, and this is a problem right across the whole of Scotland. There is increased activity in this area. Special service RTCs, we are down. We're down quite significantly in comparison to the rest of Scotland. And we only attended 3 RTCs in the last quarter, which is down 9. That's probably the lowest I've seen in a long time from our perspective. But we only attend a percentage of the RTCs in our area, if requested to do so. It is still a priority for us, and we do continue to be actively involved in any of the events that come up within Mid Lothian. Special service casualties, I've already touched on that. We attended 1 fatal and 6 non-fatal casualties in the last period, which is a decrease of 3 casualties compared to last year. We are below the Scottish and East delivery area averages. The RTCs accounted for 1 fatal and 4 non-fatal casualties, and there was 2 non-fatal casualties in response of medical emergencies. Although we don't officially go out to medical emergencies, we do still, where all else fails, an ambulance service will phone our control room and they will absolutely turn us out. And we're hoping through negotiations, as we said at the last scrutiny committee, they're moving full steam ahead at the moment, Steve, and we're hoping that this area will change. But we do not, our control room will not say no to any medical emergency if no other responder can attend. We'll absolutely attend. And the last page on the report was the unwanted fire alarm signals. We only had 8-1 last quarter, which is a decrease of 5. We continue to work with any premises who are repeat offenders. And you look at the figures, 57% were equipment failure. 3% were malicious calls, which is pretty low, and they tend to be in school areas, really, particularly when double maths is coming up or double physics. They just hit the wee red box on the wall. But we work really, really hard in the schools to reduce that figure. And we do get a decent percentage, a third of them caused by people cooking aerosols and etc. We continue to work with any repeat offenders, advise them, particularly when it comes to position of equipment. And the only reason we want to reduce that number is it doesn't look good, fire engines whizzing about Mid Lothian on the streets, moving quickly through traffic. Although we don't drive as fast to a false alarm as we would do to a house alight person's reported, there's still a big, heavy fire engine cluttering about on the streets, going to something. We don't want to cause any other harm to anybody on the way to incidents. And we do try and work regular fire safety enforcement officers, engage regularly with businesses to keep those numbers down. So that's the main part of the report. The next section is the Mid Lothian, the prevention and protection activities that have been carried out. I don't propose to go through all of this, but the first pages, 42 to 44, is just to say that our enforcement officer or officers continue to work within the area, working on all new projects and dealing with existing complaints, etc. And our home fire safety visits continue to be on the increase. It is really pleasing from the next page, 45, that we have had quite a few referrals from partner agencies. Sometimes when we go knocking on people's doors, we sometimes get the worried well as opposed to the most vulnerable. So if our partner agencies can continue
to refer vulnerable people to us. That's the ones we want to hit. They're the ones that tend not to have smoke detectors, that tend to have other issues, potentially dementia, mental health issues, and we can carry out quite complex fire safety inspections on their premises to make sure that they are not at risk from fire where possible. So the more referrals that we get, the better it is for us. And the only other thing to touch on, really, I'll not go through all the partnership work in order to say that we are actively involved right across Midlothian's area in all different aspects relating to fire and other issues. And we are continually, when asked to do so, work at on safeguarding. Our community safety team do referrals when we get them from social services to make sure that that people are not at risk from fire, particularly when it comes to the threats of fire from domestic violence, etc. Our community safety team will go out, do enhanced visits, and make sure that we have a plan in place for that family if anything else was to happen. So that continues, and we've got good links with the social services, and we'll continue that where we can through our community safety teams. And that's me. I'm open for any questions that you may have.
Thanks, Dean. Councillor McCall.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for that, Dean. Just to touch on the smoke detectors, so all council properties will all have smoke detectors and housing associations. What about private lets? I know I should know this. If you're renting out a property, is it part of the that you should have? So the properties that didn't have smoke detectors or that had smoke detectors that weren't working, are you able to tell us if they were in properties that were owned by people or if they were in private lets and not maintained? Thank you.
Not from here, but I could get you that information quite yet. My suspicion is the five that never had smoke detectors would be in private properties. And we do have a range of the other ones I would need to check on. But people do, although we fit three smoke alarms, and we have had areas where people have asked their landlords to fix smoke detectors, and the landlord's not acted quickly enough because a smoke detector bleeping is quite annoying. So someone will take a brush and whack it off the ceiling, and that's it, you know, and that does happen. That's reality. But we would feed back to the landlords if we had a fire and it wasn't working properly. But it tends to be, if it's not working, it tends to be someone's done something to it. They've taken it down or dismantled it or something, you know. Our wish would be landlords would react really quickly to things like that, but we live in the real world and it's not always the case. But I could find out if you really want to find out.
Please, that would be great, Dean. And also, I don't think I've heard of stair aware before. Could you speak a wee bit about that, please?
I'll take that just because I was just going to touch a little bit on what you've just asked regarding the smoke alarms. There is new domestic legislation, which I think there's about another 18 months to 2 years before all landlords will have to comply, which is going to be significant. But bearing in mind, in 2011 was when the last domestic smoke alarm change in legislation, which would have pushed landlords then to have hardwire detection. The important thing is, for these properties where we've attended, if the damage to the property from the fire is, which on most occasions it's contained to the first room, we will fit our smoke alarms as part of a post-domestic incident response. So we are not walking away and leaving these households without some form of smoke detection. Currently, it will not meet the new legislation because we are not electricians, and the costs are going to increase. If you want to sell your house in the very near future, you will have to have an electrician and do some work, and that will be everybody. So that's fairly significant, and in terms of public safety, it's very welcomed, certainly from my perspective. The Stair Aware campaign has been around predominantly in Edinburgh due to the sort of volume of tenement properties, people storing combustibles in the bottom of the stairs, and on occasions, unfortunately, set on fire, and you have a chimney effect as the smoke and heat from the fire goes right up through the common stair. So Stair Aware is about making people aware of those risks and really trying to engage with the properties that have any issues with combustibles, highlighting the risks before we have to go in. We've had up to 20 people getting rehoused in a particular incident I can remember in Edinburgh because of rubbish in the stairwell. It's even more important, I've seen a case study on a block of flats in Dundee where the whole place, and it happened on Christmas Day. So you had 76 residents looking for temporary accommodation on Christmas Day. So from a local authority perspective, you can imagine what that chaos that causes. So it's just, it'll be a part of our prevention work, really, and that's sort of what the Stair Aware campaign is.
And some of it came from a fire up in Mayfield, where that very thing happened. Historically, we've not had issues like this in Midlothian. Then we had one in Mayfield, and then from other people, residents in the area, saying, yeah, we've been storing, it was bins in the stair. And we've done a whole piece of work up there, and we're going to continue to roll that out throughout the area. But Midlothian haven't really had much of that in the past, so that will continue.
Thanks, Dean. Can I just pick up on one point, the home fire safety visit referrals? I think it was a couple of cycles ago, Councillor McCall had highlighted that the referrals from Midlothian was really low. I think it was 4, if I'm not mistaken, which is surprising given our housing stock and perhaps opportunities that exist there. As a consequence of that, I'd raised that with two heirs of service just to try and identify opportunities for their referrals. Have they increased from Midlothian at all? Have you seen any difference on that? No, that's fine. It's just to see if we are using these opportunities, because we've got a vast housing stock, about 7,000 houses, I think, and they each get a visit each year from either council staff or contractors. So I would like to have thought that there's opportunities here that we could refer. So it was just to see if there's an increase in that, and actually if there's, as a consequence of the discussion we had a couple of cycles ago, there has been an increase in numbers.
We'll find out about that, actually, from David Garrett and get a breakdown of where they come from. But also, part of the work that Ian Fleming had done was, and this is the people we need to get to, is training the people on the ground, because sometimes they'll go into houses and they don't see it as a fire risk. They don't see someone who's got dementia and cooking chips as a risk. They just, you know, and that's what we need, that's how we need to get to it. So the training that Ian has done, Ian's finished now, but that's carrying on through Scott McKellar. We'll continue to train the new people coming on board, and he's got a training programme set up, so hopefully we'll all see the difference there. And with your help, the two meeting in the middle, we'll see an increase, hopefully, from that area.
Thank you. Any other councillors, Mel?
Just a simple anecdote. About 15 years ago, I drove past the scout camp at Borthwick, and the scouts were having the most magnificent bonfire. Well, it wasn't the scouts. It was the wheelie bin being burnt. They burned beautifully. Is there anywhere in Scotland a precedent where we consider the bins a high-risk item of replacing them with non-flammable bins, or does technology not moved on at all in this matter?
I was involved in a few years ago a project around wheelie bins in particular in West Lothian. The only alternative is something that's metal, and that's not really suitable for what I believe we're trying to achieve with, because the costs, I think a wheelie bin's still about £50 to £60 to replace. The toxic fumes that come off them are potentially deadly, and that was part of the issue in West Lothian. They did come up with a very clever way of locking mechanism for wheelie bins, which, because it's usually the rubbish inside that's set on fire rather than the bin itself, and obviously it spreads the plastic. So there are options if wheelie bin fires are a particular problem in certain areas, but in terms of manufacturing and changing that, I would think probably not.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Happy to move on. Okay, finally, item 5.4.2, the draft strategic plan. Steve.
Thanks again, Chair. This was just to seek some support and from the board around the consultation into our new strategic plan, which is in draft for 2019 to 2022. So it closes on the 18th of July. And with a very short report, I included the summary version, which is the sort of easy to read, slightly shorter version of the draft plan. All the documentation and the full version are available via the link that is included in the report. And that's really all I was looking to say, and happy to take any questions or comments around that at this point.
Yeah, I got the email, I think it was last week, about the consultation, and certainly feedback into that with Alison's help. Councillor McCall.
Thank you, Chair. I was pleased to attend the consultation event through at Cambus Lang. First time I've gone through there, and for members of the board, it was a really interesting day, not just talking about the draft strategic plan, but also to visit the site. It really is an amazing place, and I was really quite touched to see that the legacy services are all recognised in street names, so it was really quite nice to see Lothian and Borders Avenue, or whatever it's called, to photograph off it. So that was a really interesting day, and I would say I would love to go and see Newbridge once it opens. I think it was really helpful, and I think I really like the draft strategic plan. I particularly like page 52, I think it is, where you've got the circle and you've got your outcomes on it. So we had quite a lot of chat, I think more so on prevention and response side of things. I think we sort of ran out of time, but I would say that the meeting was very positive, and I'm certainly happy to lend my support to the strategic plan.
Thanks, and thanks for attending. I was unable to attend that day, and Council McCall attended. Any other comments or questions? Okay, well, that concludes business for today. Next meeting is the 26th of August, 11 a.m. in here. Thank you.